Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
11 o'clock on your Monday morning. Welcome in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, and Chris Clark along with you. You guys get your fill of basketball this weekend?
Good music pick, Dave, by the way. I don't think you actually picked it, but you can take credit on that one. That was good. I just wanted to listen for a second, though. It was a good start. I did get my basketball feel. Did y'all? I felt like, man, just wall-to-wall basketball. And how about the growth of the women's game, too? Like, sure. I found myself sitting there bouncing back and forth. I'm going to watch some men's basketball, watch some women's basketball. Oh, Baylor and Virginia Tech are in a freaking battle on the women's side. I got to watch the end of A&M Houston on the men's side last night.
That took forever.
Dude, I had just glanced in on that game, turned it off, was getting some work done, happened to be on Twitter, and I'm just seeing, you know how when your whole feed just turns into one thing?
Sure.
I was like, oh man, I got to get this game back on. And so saw the miracle three to tie. They just ran out of gas at the end, man. But that was a fun game.
Oh yeah, I had 52 fouls between the two things, I believe, between two teams, I believe.
Chris was in bed.
Kelvin Sampson. Everybody already knows that. Kelvin Sampson said he pointed out that Texas A&M went to the free throw line 45 times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said like 45 times, I think, but I think that's literally.
Yeah,
what happened? He had four players foul out.
A little aggressive. Foul fest. A little aggressive with the whistle on that one. Not the most aesthetically pleasing game to watch, but fun nonetheless. Especially, you know, when you talk about a team in A&M that had to really earn their way in, kind of at the last minute in the SEC tournament a couple weeks ago, to go toe to toe with one of the number one seeds and one of the best teams in the country in Houston. Very entertaining, but the entire weekend entertaining. Obviously, disappointing that South Carolina was not able to make it in the second round, but you had a very wildly good game between Oregon and Creighton on Saturday night in the round of 32. Creighton ends up squeaking by Oregon in overtime there. SEC as a whole, not the greatest weekend. Mm. A lot of first-round exits there, but you still have teams like Alabama and Tennessee still alive and kicking.
Tennessee maybe, but that's not necessarily the two I would have picked. That I would have thought would be the only two alive.
Well, I had Auburn in my Final Four.
Yeah, I had Auburn winning the whole dang thing. So my bracket can be in the trash.
Do you think they didn't take Yale seriously enough?
Dude, I don't know. Sports are stupid sometimes. But, I mean, Yale should have lost to Brown in their conference tournament championship. And Brown won like six games this year, I think. So it was, fair. I mean... How I don't.
That's the beauty of March Madness, though.
It is, and I think Auburn. I was sitting there thinking, I was like, this is a team. Every time they were smoking South Carolina, they were talking about how deep this team is. Oh, they're 10 deep. They got two guys that are interchangeable at each position. But and I'm watching what they're doing to South Carolina, and I'm like, these guys are right. Like that's the best team I've seen all year. So. I knew I was a little biased towards Auburn, just watching two complete games of them against South Carolina. But then, you know, you look at what Yale does the next game, and you're like, that is what makes it just so unpredictable and fun, or you know, or frustrating if you're a fan, is that you just don't know from night to night. I mean, that's the Texas A&M team that. You know, really struggled down the stretch, and South Carolina went to A&M and beat them, and then they're going toe-to-toe with a one seed in Houston and just went blow for blow with them, almost pulled it out. I really thought, okay, here's our first big, like, March Madness moment, and it was, but I think you got to go on to win it in OT
sure.
for the three-pointer. To kind of be that that magical moment.
It is really tough. I mean, and you look at what, like Clemson, they're in the Sweet 16. They were last seen before they came in the tournament getting just destroyed by Boston College in the ACC tournament. But you get hot at the right time. You know, for some people, that's right when you're – like Oregon. You know, I know they're going home, but they went to two OTs. They beat South Carolina, upset them in the first round. You look at NC State, what they've done. You know, they advanced as an 11 seed against a 6. They held off an Oakland team that had gotten hot and just beaten Kentucky. Here's a crazy stat that I saw. This is from Kevin Sweeney on Twitter, CBB underscore Central. In the last 5 NCAA tournaments, 3 schools have each won a national championship. Virginia, more than 3 have won, but for the purposes of this stat, Virginia, Baylor, Kansas. All 3 of those schools have won a title in the last 5 tournaments. Those 3 schools haven't made it out of the first weekend in any of the other tournaments. So, like, they won the title 1 year.
Right.
The other 4 years of the tournament, they haven't made it out of the first weekend. So it's not like you can never take for granted where we should be at, you know, even if you're a school that thinks we should be in the Final Four a few times every 5 years, or we should always make the Sweet 16. It is not that easy to do.
Definitely. Did y'all watch Oakland NC State?
Oakland should have won. They really should have. The last minute, they destroyed NC State with that same play. They had Townsend come around the baseline and kind of duck in. And there was one play where he actually passed up what I thought was an open. He played an amazing game. He passed up what I thought would have been a layup probably, or a foul, or both.
Right.
And kicked it out for a 3 that they missed. And then they just, you know, NC State just kind of took over from there. But, man, that was a great game.
It was one of those games where it's kind of win-win, because you have an Oakland team that obviously had beaten, you know, Kentucky. You had a North Carolina or an NC State team that had gone that amazing run through the ACC tournament, won their first round matchup against Texas Tech. So 2 double-digit seeds going up against each other. I would have been fine either way. Obviously, NC State ends up winning to advance to their first Sweet 16 in almost a decade. Can a power program qualify as a Cinderella, or does it have to be a mid-major to you guys?
No, I think it can, just because you look at their last 14 days and look at what that's looked like.
7 wins in 12 days.
And my man at NC State, his agent, he deserves a raise as well for building in that automatic 2-year extension and raise that.
Yeah.
He went from they wanted to fire him on the Wolfpack message boards to living life, living large now. I'll say this about Oakland, though. As much as Jack Golke was the story in game 1, that Townsend kid is their best player. Like, he is an absolute stud.
Yeah.
And I had no idea about him. And he was fun. He was being guarded. Like, he was being well guarded and just kept scoring anyway.
He could do everything.
Like, his ability to score while being closely contested was impressive. And his dad's over there as a photographer, just looking as calm as he could possibly look.
And
taking crowd shots.
Both of his parents played for Oakland basketball. His brother plays soccer for Oakland.
His dad played for Coach Camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
30 some odd years ago.
There's one more game, y'all, so Oregon Creighton, right? Oregon, the team that knocked South Carolina out. Crazy stat from that game. Of course, it went into 2 overtimes, and then Oregon ends up losing by 13, which is kind of weird, you know, when you go into a 5-minute overtime period. They had, in the entire course of the game, Oregon had 4 players that scored.
I believe Cousinard and Dante were the only ones to score in the second half.
They were the only ones that scored in double figures.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that was like a comment. Somebody told me that yesterday when we were kind of talking about, hadn't caught up with them in a while.
How does that happen?
Talking about the game, they're like, Cousinard and Dante are the only ones that can score. And I'm going, yeah, that's kind of true. But, I mean, they got some other good players. Dante had 28. Cousinard had 32, and then Tracy and Shellstad had 6 and 7, respectively. Nobody else scored.
And then Shellstad got hurt, if I remember correctly, so he didn't even finish the game. So, yeah, 60 of the 73 points scored by those 2 guys.
That's stupid.
One of their guards played 43 minutes and took 3 shots and scored no points. Little bit one-dimensional, which I think hurt them in that game. Worked against South Carolina, fine.
Cousinard has got to be done now, right?
Yeah, that had to be it for him.
Well,
got to be.
He would think.
Wait a minute. Let's see.
I still want to know what the heck those announcers think South Carolina did to Jermaine Cousinard.
Well,
he's getting revenge on it.
Well,
what?
He even downplayed it after that game. He's like, oh, it's no ill will here. They were just trying to make a story out of it, but nothing there.
It doesn't even make sense, though.
But, yeah, this was his fifth full season of college basketball. I imagine he's got to be done now because he played the COVID year. This has to be it.
Yeah. Hey, but credit to him. He went out there and did the thing. So, but, yeah. But I knew going into that game against South Carolina, Cousinard was either going to score 5 or at least 25. Like it was going to be one or the other. But that's kind of how he was here too. It was very, yep. Very streaky. But when he gets locked in, man, like that, like he did, and the Dante kid was just uber talented. Like that's just
right.
I don't know what you do against that guy. It is kind of funny how teams win different ways, and then how it just gets amplified come tournament time. Like, you're going to win all year long by leaning on your guys. But then when it becomes go time, it's like it gets completely amplified. And I've never seen a team maybe so reliant on their just two guys. Yeah. Although I didn't watch the Creighton game, so I can't speak directly to it.
And this is there was overtime, so this inflates the numbers a little bit. 20 rebounds for 20 rebounds for Dante on that overtime game
still,
on Saturday.
Still.
I believe overtimes. It from... I mean,
Duke camps out under the rim.
And then how about, I don't know if y'all got to watch any. I didn't get to watch any of the Duke game, but, you know, we talked about the lower seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought JMU was supposed to be good.
38-point, well, like South Carolina against the Tar Heels.
I can't wait to talk about that.
And then UConn, men,
mm-hmm.
just a steamroll over North, like never a doubt. And that was the first time I've really watched them this year. They are really good.
I mean,
like they are talented. They're well coached. Like they look really good.
I think they were the most picked national champion when it comes to brackets.
I can see why.
You can see why. And they got San Diego State coming up in the Sweet 16 later on this week.
Do y'all think? Like, obviously, there's going to be upsets. There always are, and that there were this year too. You know, Oakland over Kentucky, et cetera, whatever. But do y'all think when this thing comes down to it? It's actually going to be almost all of the more, like, elite teams that actually make the Elite Eight in the Final Four. Like, I could see there being a bunch of upsets with everybody else. And I kind of thought we might be heading this way, but I in my head, I just thought Auburn was so – I thought they were underseeded. I thought they belonged in that mix. But I think your ones, so, you know, UConn, Houston – Purdue, UNC, throw Duke in there the way they looked yesterday. There's maybe 5-6 teams that I think are maybe just that much better than everybody else. So obviously Houston had to survive, but they were up big late in that game, and that was just one of those once-in-a-million type things where A&M clawed back. But for the most part, I think if you filled this thing out and you just pushed forward all the ones and twos – and then just flipped a coin on all the other games, you actually might end up with a decent bracket at the end because I think there is a pretty big jump between that elite group and everybody else.
There's only two seeds outside of 5 left remaining, that being NC State at 11 and Clemson as a number 6. So for the most part, you are kind of filtering out to having some of those top teams looks like heading towards the Final Four here in a couple of days.
From what we've seen so far, reset it. Who's got the best chance to win now? Is it UConn? Is it Purdue? Or is it somebody else? Is it a UNC or even a Duke who's like a 4 seed?
I mean, it's hard to argue with just how dominant a UConn's been so far. They've had the most convincing wins of everybody up to this point. Yeah. I picked North Carolina to be the national champion in my bracket.
And for some reason.
I mean, they've looked pretty convincing through their first couple games, too. We'll see how they match up with North Carolina in the Sweet 16. But when you have all 4 of the number 1 seeds still alive, it's anybody's pick.
Yeah.
I got a buddy that's a huge UNC fan, and he obviously thinks they got a great shot to win it, but he was saying he thinks they need one more guy to emerge to, like, truly have a shot to win the whole thing once it gets down to these elite matchups at the end. But it actually, you know, guys, we all like to pull for the underdogs, but ultimately, you do like to see the big dogs there at the end, I think.
Women's team was in action over the weekend, got through their first two matchups pretty easily. I think we knew the Presbyterian game was going to be a walk in the park, and Don Staley and the team are obviously focused on every opponent the same way, but we looked at it as saying, okay, this is a team that you beat by 70 points earlier on in the season. Should be pretty easy, beat them by 52 on a Friday afternoon. But the North Carolina game, a little more of a concern. Like, okay, this is a team that you took on the road, your first road game of the season. They really pushed you a little bit. Had a lead there in the second half. I think you're down by 11 at one point. And they just end up steamrolling them yesterday as well. So a pretty easy first two rounds for South Carolina as they make yet another Sweet 16 coming up later on this week.
So me and my wife went to the game yesterday. That was the best half of basketball against an actual somewhat comparable opponent that I've ever seen in person. Like, that was insane. And I thought South Carolina set the tone early. I thought it was interesting. They came out in full court press defense the first couple of possessions of the game. And then I don't think they really did it much the rest of the way, but it was, I thought it was just kind of a message like, hey, we're here and you're about to feel this. And then the number of shots they hit from the outside during that stretch where they went on a 30-2 run, I think it was just insane. And I think that, you know, and Don Staley talked about this. That's the maybe the first time in a while we've seen this team where just everything was clicking. And they're good enough, they're talented enough. Everything doesn't have to be clicking for them to beat pretty much everybody. But when it's all coming together like this, and you know, we still got to remember, as good as they've been, even though they're undefeated, this is still a young team. There's still teaching moments in every single game, I'm sure, that Don Staley can point to. But, you know, I was sitting there as South Carolina extended the lead, and I was kind of thinking, I wonder going into halftime if, you know, if Don Staley's going to remind them of the Tennessee game and how, hey, you had a 23-point lead in this game, and it withered away, and you nearly lost. And I was thinking that kind of midway through the first half. Well, they went ahead and kind of stepped on them early to where this game was over, and you saw a little bit of a lull in the third quarter, I think, where North Carolina didn't quit, credit to them, and then South Carolina just I thought completely showed their strength and ability in the fourth quarter to extend the lead even more. But it was dominant.
Chris Wellbaum, our colleague Gamecock Central, that does a great job of covering the program, who we have here on the game a lot as a guest, you know, he pointed out three of arguably the best players on the day. One of them is not arguable, Malaysia Fulwiley, but Fulwiley, Tessa Johnson, and Chloe Kitts, who's a sophomore but was technically in that 2023 class. She just enrolled early. Three of the best players, maybe the three best players on the court yesterday. So to your point, Wes, about this being a young team, they are, and there's still a lot of learning, and you've seen the progression in a lot of those players from, you know, with Kitts from last year to this year, from Fulwiley and Johnson from game one until now, you know, heading into the Sweet 16, there's been, you know, a clear progression there. And that should continue to give you hope for the future as well.
Well, and that's the exciting part is, you know, it's understandable for freshmen to maybe struggle a little bit in these tournament environments because it's a different kind of vibe. Lights are a little bit brighter, but, you know, didn't really show any signs of slowing down. Now, yes, Tessa Johnson didn't have any points the other night against Presbyterian, bounced back with 11 points yesterday, but Malaysia Fulwiley just continued to play lights out, 37 points between the two games. As you mentioned, great performances by Chloe Kitts as well, and then your usuals, Camila Cardoso getting the double-double yesterday in her return, Ashton Watkins getting the 11 points. So again, this team looking just as good as ever after having some scares in the SEC tournament a couple weeks ago, but that week and a half off that you have between the end of the tournament and the start of March Madness for them did them a lot of good, and now getting set to take on either Oklahoma or Indiana in the Sweet 16 later on this week.
Yeah, we'll find out later today what that's going to look like as far as opponents, but yeah, they used this kind of time to reset, and I feel like have taking their game to another level. And, you know, I wondered why the line was so large in this game. I think it was 21.5 when these two teams, obviously this was months ago, and it was in North Carolina, but these two teams were in a tight basketball game earlier this year. And South Carolina, or, you know, they made it look like North Carolina didn't belong on the same court with the way they played. And it was just top to bottom. I mean, who on South Carolina's team did not play well yesterday? There is no answer. You know, everybody that played meaningful minutes had a contribution. And I think that's probably it's a microcosm of kind of what they have built there, in that from, if you look at this entire season, how balanced the stats are, it is because, and not every coach can do this, the ability to manage all the different, you know, personalities and egos. I don't mean ego in a bad way, just everybody has their own way of doing things, and all the talent where you've got, how many girls on this team would be a superstar for pretty much every single other team, except for maybe two or three that also have some balance themselves, would be a superstar for all these other teams in the country. Yet they have all agreed to put a little bit of the individual accolades aside in order to be a team. And so to continue to do that, I mean, Fulwiley continues to come off the bench, and still the second she hits the court, her impact is felt. And just as, I mean, she's out there picking people's pockets, blocking shots, and then getting back to the other end and making things happen. Her defense has improved so much. I mean, Fulwiley, before this thing is over, is going to be the best player in the country,
well,
I think.
And you look like there was a little extra this game. Remember, Fulwiley got benched the last UNC game because of her defense.
Yep.
Deja Kelly, 2-for-13, I think, in this game. Raven Johnson, Fulwiley on her. And Fulwiley, not only is she super talented, she makes the right play. Like, she's not, she could be extremely selfish. Look at me, watch. Even her very flashy plays make total sense. Going behind the back, all that stuff. She just makes the right play.
Absolutely. And again, they'll await the winner of Oklahoma and Indiana later on today to see who their Sweet 16 opponent is later on this week.
All right, let's talk some Gamecock baseball here. By the way, can we cue up number 11 here from Mark Kingston? Dave, I thought the start that South Carolina got from Pitzer yesterday, maybe, obviously, is a great series victory, but as far as what it means for South Carolina moving forward, the start they got out of this kid may be one of the single biggest, best things that has happened for this team so far. We're going to talk about why that is. Let's go out to Coach Mark Kingston in the press conference from yesterday.
You know, we looked at last Sunday. Obviously, Becker is in consideration to be a weekend starter, but he was so good coming out of the bullpen his last few times that we just thought it's something we want to try maybe for one more week. Give Pitzer a shot. Pitzer's been really good out of the bullpen. And let's see what he looks like as a starter. It was at home, so he didn't have to make his first SEC start on the road. It was a chance to give him a start at home. And if it didn't go well, then Becker would be in there early. And if it did go well, we thought we could get what we got today. So Pitzer was outstanding. His poise was good. His stuff was good. He was competitive. Looked like a veteran out there. So I think he did everything you wanted to see out of a pitcher, no doubt about it. 9 strikeouts, 1 walk to a team hitting .330. Couldn't be more impressed.
For one, I think that speaks to the depth of what South Carolina has at pitcher so far this season, that you can go into the weekend with that TBD, as they've done several times already, knowing you have a variety of options based on what you use in your bullpen through the first two games, especially like a doubleheader scenario they ended up having on Saturday. And as he mentioned, Pitzer has been very good in his bullpen work so far this season. But for a true freshman to go out there against the number 3 team in the country that's hitting as well as it had coming into the weekend, and to blank them for 3 innings and end up with 9 strikeouts through 6 1/3, just an incredible, incredible performance. And maybe we now know who that third weekend starters are going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's his until it's not. Like, you gave him this weekend start, like Kingston just said, at home. So now it sets him up to be able to go to Alabama this weekend and not just have one more thing to worry about in his first start, basically, against SEC competition. So I think for him to go out there and do what he did, it makes this pitching staff that much deeper. And you know, I think we've seen this group of pitchers be a little bit deeper than we thought, but you were still looking for who is that option that you can turn to every Sunday. And I think once you can kind of solidify where, all right, you know when you're turning in that projected starters thing every single week, that you just know who the three guys are, that's a huge luxury, because once you do that, everybody else kind of knows where they stand as well. And so he mentioned liking Becker and what he had done out of the pen. I think his stuff really plays up out of the pen. And so he has a chance to come in knowing he's only going to pitch, you know, an inning or two, sometimes three, but he doesn't have to hold back. He doesn't have to prepare for, oh, I'm going to face the lineup two, three times. I think when you now have maybe that 1-2 punch for Sundays, or you can use Becker at any point during the week, it allows you to turn around and do that knowing you have Pitzer for Sunday, as opposed to having to think, well, do we go ahead and burn Becker now? Are we possibly going to use him on Sunday? It just takes one more kind of big question out of the equation. And so if this team ends up going on an SEC run, we're going to look back at this weekend for a lot of different reasons, from what they did at the plate, competitive at bats, to really locking down a Vanderbilt team that top to bottom has hit the ball very well this year coming into this weekend.
Yeah, and I think you've still got some other guys, right, that you feel good about. Let's say something does go sideways. Hopefully you have found your guys, but you've got Becker still there. You could always move him back. You've got Ty Good, for example. You've got Roman Kimball. All these guys have done some good things, but, man, Pitzer was so impressive, and I think, like, having the stuff is one thing, but having the poise that Mark Kingston talked about to go in there, hey, here's your first start, man. True freshman, not only SEC series, but here comes a team who's number three. Here comes a team that's hitting, what were they hitting, 330 yep. as a club?
Yep.
And then all you do is go out there and you strike out nine and walk one, which, again, what we know about Matt Williams, their pitching coach, he wants you to pound the strike zone. You don't want to be walking guys. Didn't do that at all. Really challenged Vandy and ended up winning the vast, vast majority of those matchups. And then you look at his numbers on the whole for Pitzer this season, again, mostly out of the pen, starting this weekend, 0.48 on the ERA. He's 4-0. He has 29 strikeouts to 7 walks in just over 18 innings. So he's throwing strikes, and he's getting people to swing and miss at the ball a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Feel really good about this pitching staff. Eli Jones had the no-hitter through 6 innings on Saturday in game number 1. I will continue to sing the praises of Garrett Gainey coming in as a lockdown closer in both those games on Saturday. He still only has the 1 earned run surrendered this season, that being the home run at the end of that game against Clemson a couple weeks back, but he's been really good. So top to bottom pitching staff, got to feel really confident about it right now. Obviously hitting got back on track this weekend, had a lot of production from the top of the lineup, which we didn't see a whole lot of over the course of the weekend last weekend against Ole Miss. So a great series overall for South Carolina to get themselves back on track in SEC play.
This pitching staff way deeper than I think we thought on paper it might be. And we saw that early on, I feel like, in non-con, but you were sitting there wondering, all right, what's going to happen when they start playing SEC teams? Do they kind of come back down to earth a little bit? So far, so good as far as this staff goes. I think they'll keep tweaking every good staff, you know, every good coaching staff does, but I think they feel like they've found some things. And, yeah, you have to make decisions now because you have a Thursday, Friday, Saturday game. That affects, you know, do you just move everybody up? Do you start somebody different on Thursday and leave your Friday and Saturday guys in the same slot? So you still have decisions to make, but it just makes it, I think, so much easier now that you've started to solidify some spots.
You look at the rankings, by the way, before we get off the topic of baseball, guys. Baseball America, week 6, top 25. Carolina lands at number 10, so they've shot back up. Inside the top 10, Vanderbilt, interestingly, at number 7, still a great team, right?
Sure, sure.
Still a really, really good team, but number 10 for South Carolina in the Baseball America top 25. Then if you go to Perfect Games top 25, Gamecocks a little bit lower there, number 18. Vandy stays at number 8, actually, but Gamecocks moving on up in the rankings, and deservedly so with what they did. By the way, how about Gavin Cassis last game? Got to get him a homer against Vandy.
That's right.
I had to feel nice.
Oh, absolutely. I am giveaway. All right, wrapping up today's edition of the show, since we are in week number two of spring practice, a lot of new faces, a lot of new numbers.
Is this the pop quiz?
This team. This is the pop quiz.
Oh,
I'm going to see if you guys can tell me the new numbers for new Gamecocks after only 1 week of spring practice. Now, we can do this two ways. I can give you the number and you tell me the name, or I can give you the name and you tell me the number. How do you want to do this?
You're going to knock our credibility.
Yeah. Number. Give me the number.
Yeah, I like that too. I agree.
Give me the number.
He's going to give us the opposite probably.
I think I'd struggle the other way.
I have six here. Three of them are transfers. Three of them are true freshmen.
So nervous.
All right. We'll start off with number 54.
Now, are you going to say, because some of these might have offense and defense, right?
As far as I know, these are all.
Okay.
No, these aren't shared numbers.
54.
I tried my best here.
I think that's a shared number. I'll have to double check, but I know who 54 is on defense. Not a new face, though.
So this one's going to be
on
offense.
Go ahead and say it.
Jamal Weiss on defense.
Okay.
I believe.
It's also a true freshman coming in on offense.
Cam Pringle.
Yep. That's correct.
So, yes.
Ding. Correct. Hit the ding button.
We still have the ding button.
Is there a ding button? No.
We didn't prepare Dave for the ding.
We didn't have ready to go. All right, next, I'm going to go 15.
15.
Oh, I got that.
Is
Fred J.R. Johnson.
Yes.
Let's see here. I had David Busey.
You got it wrong.
Nope.
That's J.R. Johnson.
Scratch that one because it is J.R. J.R. is wearing 15 now.
Okay.
I think they changed that one on you, Tyler.
Okay, so I'm
sources say.
They did. Okay, so they did. I looked on the roster earlier this morning. I guess they've changed it.
Okay, so
then.
We get an extra
so
point for knowing
you
that.
You get an extra point for that one. But, yes, nice. So David Busey's showing us 13 now.
There you go. There you go.
All right, 99.
I got that one, too.
I think I do, too. Is this a transfer defensive lineman?
Yes, it is.
All at once?
DeAndre Jules.
All right, figured that one would be easy to remember. 44.
44. That's a double because Maurice Brown, the second, is offense, tight end.
Extra point for knowing the second.
We're going to go with a transfer.
Transfer.
I know this one, too.
Oh, defensive tackle? Defensive lineman?
Yes.
Monkel Goodwine.
Yep.
All right. Going to go with another freshman here, number 3.
Oh, offense or defense?
Offense.
Okay, yeah, you definitely got doubles on both these. Goes OD Fortune on defense.
I meant there was no doubles with both players being new.
Okay. Oh, I got you.
I'm going with the number of the guy that is new.
One of Greenville's finest, Mazio Bennett, wide receiver.
That is correct. Mazio Bennett is wearing number 3. And last but not least, number 60.
We can't mess this up at the very end, dude.
You guys have been perfect so far.
It's a tough one, too. Number 60.
60.
Going to go with a transfer offensive lineman.
Okay. Hold on.
There is no double to this number, by the way.
60. Okay, I think I...
Is that... Hold on, this is not my guess. Can we talk this through?
Sure, you can talk
this
through.
Is that Parks or...
Yeah, I was going to say Parks or Simpkins. Simpkins is not. I think it's Parks. Yeah.
I feel like Simpkins is like 61, but I don't...
Or a 50-something. Yeah. I think it's Parks. Is that our final answer?
Aaron A.J. Parks.
You gonna lock that in?
Yeah.
Lock it in.
That is correct. Aaron Parks is number 60.
Nailed it.
What number is Torricelli Simpkins the 3rd?
I almost put him on here, so he is number 76.
76. Oh, okay. Ooh. That's right. Yep.
So there you go. You guys passed your first week of pop quiz.
Thank you. Can we do it again next week?
We can.
For something different.
I'll mix it up next week.
Pop quiz sponsored by That Dead Air is... Your name here.
We'll figure it out.
Make it happen.
Week number two of spring practice getting started this week, and a lot of new faces, a lot of new numbers to remember. That'll do it for today's edition of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs. Halftime show with myself today as Terry Ford is not here. Coming up next right here on The Game.